Our next speaker is Marcos Suero. He's the audio archivist at Columbia University. Previously, he was the sound engineer at the Allen Lomax Archives, where he reformatted more than 800 hours of Lomax field recordings. He has also been the non-audio print conservator at Emory University and the Center for Black Music Research in Chicago. So please join me in welcoming Marcos.
So perhaps because of the time I developed this talk, I was a recent father. I decided to call this Choosing Your Favorite Children, because I can't imagine having more than one child. You know, do you love me more, Dad, than you love me? I don't want to deal with that. What's the story so far? The story so far is this. In recent years, there have been several studies reporting the danger our audiovisual heritage is in. The latest one, issued by the Tape Project, is called Tracking the Real World, R-E-E-L World, a survey of audiovisual collections in Europe. Among its findings is an estimation of 20 million hours of material, with 13% of carriers known to be in danger. Because of these reports, curators are increasingly aware that audio and moving image materials in their possession are inherently fragile. The days of putting the carriers on shelves and closing the door seem to be over. Because of these reports, curators are increasingly aware, often further analyses reveal that in order to ensure long-term access, collections need to be in digital form and transferred to trusted digital repositories. However, digitizing and digitally preserving according to accepted standards is a delicate, time-consuming, and expensive process. It requires a long-term investment that usually involves much more complicated processes than just putting tapes on a shelf. It requires a strong commitment on the part of institutions. Again, from the Tape Report, there's a huge amount of valuable audiovisual material spread over a large number of institutions that are not in the best position to guarantee long-term access and preservation. Faced with limited budgets, libraries and archives must face the painful task of choosing their favorite children for survival as the ship sinks. Even thinking beyond individual collections, there is growing concern that there simply may not be enough technical expertise or equipment wherewithal to carry out the task before content is irretrievable. In other words, we need to prioritize. The Columbia University Libraries, with work funded by the Andrew Mellon Foundation, have developed a survey tool to assist collection managers who are not AV experts to prioritize audio moving image materials. This tool will be made freely available this year by May. The tool is a Microsoft Access relational database which allows for a friendly interface and hopefully easy customization for the needs of different institutions. Using this tool, we have surveyed more than 42,000 unique and rare items from our collections. I have surveyed 42,000 items. Our survey was based only on visual and somewhat olfactory examination. It did not include playback because of the large number of items, and also because we had nothing to play with. There's three sources of data. Trained but not expert surveyors, well, in this case, it was me, so you can call me whatever, who examined the materials. Curators went through information about the content and its potential usefulness, and a built-in knowledge database which automatically calculates ratings for a series of factors based on available literature. Surveyors must be able to identify media and damage types, but do not need to know, for instance, which brands of audio tape seem to be problematic. The computer already knows this. The outcome is a set of broad priorities for preservation action. Now, how do we prioritize? There's several algorithms that people have used, and many of them use the same. Not unexpectedly, they use the same kind of factors: value, condition, obsolescence, exposure, whether it's an original or a copy, and uniqueness. What we ended up using is an adaptation of the Caliper algorithm, which was developed by the California Preservation Program, for determining preservation actions across collections, how appropriate they were in California. And this is after, if you look at this, what we did is sort of create a tree that would be, where the factors would be sort of binary, if yes, then this, if not, then this. And we sort of simplified it and then fudged a little bit. And these are the weights of the factors that give you the preservation priority. All the ratings are given 1 to 5, and then they're multiplied by the factor shown. Let's look at each of these lines. The first one is exposure, and that has a weight of 1/5. In our survey, use is not a factor because the items in our survey are never played back because they are unique or valuable. I should say they should never be played back, but sometimes they are, with varying results of success. So the quality of housing determines the level of exposure. The better the housing, the lower the exposure. And housing is the average of environmental condition and container condition, where environmental condition rates the quality of the storage room and the box, and the container condition rates the existence and quality of the individual container. Overall condition is by far the most complex of the factors. It has a 1.5/5 weight and refers to the physical state of the item. It combines three factors: inherent carrier instability, deterioration, and visible damage. In our survey, AVDB, that's what we call it so far, AVDB. It's not very sexy, except, you know, R2D2 was pretty sexy. All of these factors are combined. Surveyors check off visible symptoms such as cupping, mold, or palmitic acid, plus medium and brand. The computer automatically rates the condition of the item based on this data. For example, nitrate film is considered automatically in critical condition, and a Scotch 226 reel of tape is considered in poor condition because of the history behind it. Let's look a little more in detail. In our computations, we think of the carry instability rating as a measure of impermanence, where we adapt the idea of permanence from the imaging world as years before noticeable change occurs. In our case, we adapted to say years before noticeable change to the content occurs. In the case of high rating, it means that irreparable change to the content has probably already occurred. We like this idea better than longevity or life expectancy, which seems more applicable to a yes-no situation. Life expectancy is, you know, you're living until you die. That applies for digital materials, perhaps, where at one point the content is literally unretrievable and yesterday was perfectly fine. But we like the idea of impermanence a little better. The advantage of using this concept is that it's then applicable across media. The disadvantage is that there are no standards yet. We would like to see standards similar to those developed for testing image permanence, developed for the audio and moving image world. And of course, carry instability is material and brand dependent. The other factor in overall condition is deterioration, which we define as evidence of accelerated carry instability. Maybe, maybe not, maybe it's just older. It includes things such as hydrolysis in audio tape, palmitic acid in lacquer discs, or vinegar smell in film. We may not know the reason why. It could be that the item is older or that it has been stored in poor conditions, but it shows advanced instability. We may be able to show to slow a possibly accelerated instability, or we may not. In any case, it may be cause for concern. And finally, the other one, the third factor in overall condition, refers to specific events in the lifetime of the object likely to affect content integrity, such as mold growth, scratches on film, etc. Often these events immediately affect content integrity, for example, scratches on a record, but may or may not affect the long-term stability of the carrier. Again, so this is, I'm recapping what the factors are in overall condition, and then moving on. This is the idea that I have for current thought when defining overall condition. The base is the carry instability, which is the blue line. Then deterioration exposure sort of accelerates that bad path towards irretrievable or noticeable damage. And then damage tends to lift that whole line up. So if you have a scratch, immediately it's noticeable. But if it's vinyl, it may not degrade much faster. I mean, the vinyl will degrade as vinyl does, which is not very fast. But immediately you have damage, so it sort of lifts it up to the noticeable rating. We'll go back to this. So here's what I was trying to explain.
Okay.
For example, vinyl under low exposure has a high intrinsic permanence. Imagine, however, that a vinyl record has had relatively high exposure and has been scratched in the past. When we survey it today, its content has noticeable change. However, with low exposure, it's not likely to change for a long time. Compare that to that, which statistically seem to be showing high impermanence when their content may be irretrievable soon. And in this case, we could talk about life expectancy because literally one day it's irretrievable. All things being equal, the debt should have higher priority. And the survey knows this. The survey tool knows this. Obsolescence, in our case, this has been subject of discussion before. In our case, it simply means current support for playback equipment. And that includes how widely installed it is, so how many machines are there, and how widely manufactured they still are. The data of these ratings have been compiled from various sources and has relatively low weight because as of today, there is no format that cannot be played by someone somewhere in the world, but this may soon change. Finally, value has the highest weight, actually, and is determined by curators of the collections based on two factors, intellectual value, denotes the informational richness of the collection and its importance for research and education, and local value includes factors such as monetary value, importance to the institution, and other aspects that are not directly relevant for research and education. These definitions are adapted from the consortial survey of the Philadelphia Area Consortium of Special Collections Libraries. It's quite a mouthful. And it's also funded by the Mellon Foundation. Note that the ratings are collection-wide. We'll talk about that later. And it also has the highest weight, as I mentioned. So again, here we have our little preservation priority number, which it's a number and should be taken with a grain of salt. It's not absolute because there's many unknowns when you actually do surveys. But let's take a look at other useful factors. Intellectual control is existence and completeness of cataloging and other content descriptions and rights ownership. It's existence and completeness of documentation about copyright and ownership of the materials. These are not a part of the calculation, but they're good things to know. So let's take a look at what this looks like. These are your friend ABDB. As we said earlier, it has been created as a Microsoft Access Relational Database. The initial screen provides access to the data entry function or reports. Clicking on data entry brings up a search window. Here we are searching for the Kagawa collection, an actual collection of the Burke Library at Columbia. So you just enter Kagawa there. And there's a screen that we skipped, but it takes you to the Kagawa collection screen. Note that it scores very high in intellectual and local value ratings. The rate subform in the center gives a quick snapshot of the collection, 3 film reels, 50 sound tape reels, an average condition of 3.4, and one of them is high risk, which is the little red one. I don't know if you can see that. And this is the heart of the database, the units screen. There are 13 tabs for 13 different types of carriers. Here we have clicked the tab for audio reel. The number of items being surveyed is entered in the quantity field at the top, in this case one, which is always better if you can survey one item at a time. Of course, you get better granularity. General descriptors of the items, such as base or thickness, tend to be on the left, while to the right are symptoms such as mold or cupping. A surveyor clicks the appropriate button when he or she notices a symptom. Whenever possible, we try to use AS or YASA terminology. Many of the fields have drop-down menus. For instance, here common reel diameters are listed, but also free text is almost always allowed. Here we have, following YASA guidelines, we are using metric measurements, but English measures display along the bottom or when a measurement field is clicked, shown here. Condition ratings are color-coded. Blue fields indicate a rating of 2 out of 5 or moderate problem. In this case, there are 4 moderate problems. The reel is non-archival. It's recorded at a slow speed. It wasn't wound, library wound, and it's less than 50 micrometers thick. Yellow fields indicate a rating of 3 or a significant problem. In this case, this is an acetate tape. And orange indicates a rating of 4 or a serious problem, which in this case, the tape was spoking. So that's why. Normally, we enter the value suggested by the computer, which is this one, this gray 4 here. So when you click on the set to, it gives you the overall condition of 4. And that means that the AVDB now has all the elements necessary to compute the preservation priority for this item, which is 4.1 over on the right, which is very high. Normally, we enter that value, but we don't have to. We think this is actually in very good condition, or whatever other condition, we can change it. And then the color changes to red to tell you, warning, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you know better? That's what it's saying. The intellectual and local value ratings, which are here, are also inherited from the general collection, but those can be changed by clicking on them. And for example, you have a valuable collection, but you know that this tape is a recording of the researcher's dog barking, which may not be that interesting, then you can go in there and change the intellectual value and local value ratings, as well as the obsolescence rating. For example, YASA gives the highest rating to any mechanical carrier, like records. They just get the highest rating. I may not agree with that, and some people may not agree with that, so they might want to change the obsolescence rating for records. So these are the calculations that the AVDB is doing. It had a relatively high exposure rating, quite high bad condition. High means bad in our case, it's just like in FACET and like NYU will. Obsolescence is quite high, and then very high in value. So the end result is a 4.1. And again, 4.1 is, what's the difference between 4.0 and 4.1? Well, probably nothing. Because, for example, not knowing whether the tape is acetate or whether the tape inside the box is indeed the brand that says on the box changes those ratings. So the precision is quite low. So we say 4.1, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's 4.1. Should take it with a grain of salt. There's a hefty set of automations that facilitate data entry. For example, maximum running times of video cassettes are entered depending on the format, and audio reels less than 10.5 inches are flagged as non-archival. But again, the surveyor always has the last word and can change the value supplied by AVDB. We have surveyed over 42,000 items. Unfortunately, the average condition of our reel-to-reel tape, sound disk, and film is above 3 in the higher risk category. The survey has helped Columbia set priorities among them as we build an audio moving image preservation program. Still to come are more and more complete reports that include the preservation priority rating. Right now we only have them for condition. The instruction manual is partially written. It's also not very fun to read, but hopefully it'll be a little more fun to read. And we're also going to try to do a playback sample whereby what we're going to do is the items, a lot like NYU has done actually, the items that have passed the visual inspection, we're going to play and make sure we're not missing things. In other words, if we give a good rating to, say, cassettes is probably the one I'm most worried about, and half of the cassettes that have passed start squealing, well, we're going to try to find out which tapes are squealing and why did that happen. And then I have some ugly photos of things we have seen. This is, I don't know if you can see it, but these are crystals on a cassette, which you don't see very often. Mm. This is a cool dictabound, a magna disc, paper tape from Mr. Begun, Sander. These were actually message tapes from we had boxes and boxes of this. They're like 60-second endless loop message tapes. So I wonder if you do preservation, then the audio file should be infinite, right? this is a 180-minute cassette tape. Should I say it was an 180-minute cassette? Bad news. Fungus among us. Delamination among us. Palmitic acid galore.
Coming, yeah.
UFOs.
Broadcasting service disc.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you got those. It looked just like that.
Yep. UFOs landing in the library. Delamination. I don't know if you can see that. That looks a bit like those horrible pictures from nuclear blastoffs, where there's an outline of whatever happened. It's basically the acidic box reacting or not reacting to the reel. And still my favorite, the RCA cartridge. That's it. Thank you very much. By the way, the database is in a beta form, is available at that address, and we love comments. We want to hear, want you to try it and see if it makes sense. If you see if things
that
don't make sense, yeah, let us know. Thank you.